India was one of the countries most affected by the tsunami last month. More than 10,000 people are dead, 5,000 missing, 38,000 people are living in relief camps. In the wake of this disaster, India did not ask for, nor did it accept, international relief aid. Instead, the country mounted its own relief and rescue operation, relied on its extensive navy and its considerable expertise in coping with natural disaster. Some, however, have questioned India's decision not to accept aid from the government of the United States or other countries around the world. While grateful for the concern, India has politely said no, and in fact has provided assistance to some of its neighbors, to Sri Lanka and to Indonesia. Ambassador Ronan Sen, India's ambassador to the United States, joins us here in Studio 3A to discuss India's decision to decline international aid. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, totn@npr.org. And Ambassador, we're honored to have you with us today. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
So why did the Indian government feel, in the wake of all of this disaster, it did not need international relief aid?
Well, Neil, first, I'd like to say, as you pointed out yourself, that we are confident of our capability in terms of human and material resources of handling this on our own. And this has been strengthened by the spontaneous response, the outpouring of solidarity from all parts of the country, in terms of volunteers, not just in terms of financial supply, donations. The second is our own experience with past disasters. We have had a series of them, the earthquakes and the cyclones. And where in doing, we found that in ultimately most, in fact, an overwhelming percentage of the actual relief rehabilitation, including long-term rehabilitation, was done with our own expertise and resources. Thirdly, and this was very, very important, we felt that the needs of some of our neighbors were greater than ours. So these were broadly the three factors which influenced our decision.
You have been quoted as saying another factor that went into the decision was pride.
No, I was asked a question of whether it's arrogance. I said, no, it's not arrogance, but it is a certain, you might say, pride in the way our people have responded. Pride in the way people have responded from all parts of the country, not only with financial donations, but actual by volunteering and coming on the scene and helping.
Did India's self-confidence, did that sense of pride cost lives?
No, it did not. Because we, as you've just pointed out earlier, Neil, we have the resources. That means we were able to get there in a matter of hours to the scenes, which were, in the sense of our, in our own 1,400 miles of coastline. Mm-hmm. And we had our response time was a little bit slower in terms of our own islands, which were close to Indonesia. That's about 840, 850, 60 nautical miles away. Whereas Sri Lanka was not much nearer, it was 240 nautical miles away. So we did that as to the best of our ability. And another negative factor was that the main airbase we had in the Andaman Nicobar Islands, in the Nicobar Islands, was destroyed by the tsunami. Mm-hmm. So, but taking these factors into account, we could respond and we could be there not only handling our own rescue and relief, search and rescue operations and then relief, but we could be there on the same day in Sri Lanka and the following day in the Maldives.
We'll get back to the Nicobar and Andaman Islands in just a moment, but I did want to point out the Indian Navy is far and away the most capable naval force in the Indian Ocean.
It is. It is the major presence.
And this, your ships have been made available not just for Indian relief, but again to some of your neighbors as well.
Absolutely. We deployed 7 naval ships in Sri Lanka and 3 naval ships in the Maldives.
And there are hospital ships also.
There are 3 hospital ships. One is deployed in Sri Lanka, one is deployed in the Andaman Nicobar Islands, and one in Aceh in Indonesia.
Mm-hmm. So that the effort... let me put this a different way. When we hear that India is declining international aid, and this is government-to-government aid we're talking about.
Yes.
We're not talking about UNICEF or the Red Cross or things like that.
Absolutely not, because those are organizations which are working with their Indian counterparts. And we have other NGOs who are working. They have a long history of working with the with their Indian counterparts. And their work is going on in harmony with ours.
It is unusual for many of us to see India as an aid giver rather than an aid recipient.
Yes, and that change has taken place. Actually, even before all of this, you know, for instance, in Afghanistan, we have already spent more than $400 million in assistance. We are a creditor nation today to the International Monetary Fund. We are not only, debt relief doesn't arise in our case, mm-hmm. because, in fact, we are paying back our loans much before they are due. So the position has changed, yes.
Yes. Earlier today, Jean-Pierre Jouyet, the president of the Paris Club, mm-hmm. announced that creditor nations will immediately freeze the debt repayments of countries hit by the tsunamis. You're telling me that does not affect
Absolutely.
India?
Absolutely. That's irrelevant as far as India is concerned. In fact, we have written off our debts to many countries in Africa.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. And again, if you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, totn@npr.org. And we'll talk with Matthew, who's with us on the line from Gilroy, California.
Hi. I guess on some levels I can understand criticism of India for declining aid, but I would think that it would be seen as commendable that they do that, because that means that so much more aid can go to so many of the other countries in that region, especially in light of, you know, of their extensive military and, national resources that they have to deal with these types of things.
And that's really what you've been talking about, Mr. Ambassador.
Absolutely. I agree fully. And that was one of the primary considerations. We didn't want immediate aid to be diverted to us when it's a question of hours and days rather than weeks.
Matthew?
I don't know. So I hope the critics just go to realize that soon before they talk too loudly.
Okay, Matthew.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the phone call. You mentioned earlier the Nicobar and Andaman Islands. These are places where some very primitive peoples live and they're protected by the Indian government. Outsiders are not supposed to go there. We understand that the native Nicobaris had some trouble getting relief supplies there because there are settlers on some of these islands. They're illegally who were much more aggressive than the native peoples there, and as a result, native people have submitted a petition to your government asking for the settlers to be removed. Has the tsunami created an opportunity for the Indian government to remove those people who were there?
Well, the situation as far as the what we refer to, I think rather patronizingly, as the primitive tribes, they have their own way of life, and which has been they have lived that way, mm-hmm. for some thousands of years. Now, we have to be very careful, and I said, as far as outsiders, you refer to outsiders, mm-hmm. Indian citizens are not allowed free entry into those areas, because, you know, sometimes we found a common cold can kill them. So we have to be very careful, and also their way of life. And if you had a sudden influx of people, it would have been much more traumatic for them than, let's say, a tsunami. So we had to carefully take those factors into account. And they're declining. Those tribes are declining. The birth rates are falling. And we're extremely concerned. That's one aspect. The other aspect is certainly we will take this factor into consideration. And we are considering a series of steps as a result of the tsunami, including this factor. But also I would like to point out that we are doing a lot of introspection. We have done very well. But we are doing a lot of introspection on where we could have done better.
And what are you thinking about? I mean, many of those missing in the tsunami are still are in those islands.
Absolutely. Because what happens, Neil, is, you know, what happens is that these waves, they suck people into the ocean and then they throw them back. And in the islands, when you have a large number of small islands, and here you're talking more than 500 islands, they can't throw them back into the seashore in the sense of they miss. A lot of people, let's say, miss the target, and they throw, you know, so they're back in the sea.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Uday, and Uday's with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I had a question about Nicobaris. I know the reason, and I understand the reason why we wouldn't allow people to get in there. However, do we have any accounting of how many, or what is the population there? In what way are they affected? How many people are gone? If those populations are already endangered, this would make the situation even worse. So even though I understand about the the diseases, et cetera, coming in because of contacts with outsiders, still some intervention needs to be done, I would think. So I'll take your comments off the air.
Thanks for the call, Uday.
Thank you. I think that's a very good question there. You asked about, we have some estimate. It's not fully accurate, as you know, but the maximum, the number of people who have been affected among the tribals happen to be what we call the most integrated. That is the Nicobaris, and they are the largest tribe. There are more than 28,000 of them. The other five tribes, they range in terms of population between the low of 43 to the high of 378 by last count. These are 2001 census. Now, those small tribes have been the least affected. In fact, they seem to have, virtually all of them seem to have survived. The maximum hit have been the Nicobaris. And out of this 28,653 that we have in the last census reports, we have confirmed that 1,151 lives have definitely been lost. And virtually all the missing out of the 5,000 plus missing happen to be these Nicobaris. Mm.
And as you mentioned earlier, also the air base there in the islands was severely damaged, and many people lost their lives there.
Absolutely, absolutely. This was a big handicap because that was a major air base, and we could have mobilized those helicopters, which were also washed into the sea, and we had lost all the people there. But that was destroyed on Sunday, and by Wednesday, we got it operational.
We're speaking with the Ambassador of India to the United States, Ambassador Ronan Sen. He's with us here in Studio 3A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Manny. Manny's calling from Corvallis, Oregon.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you, Neil. I understand India's turning down the offer, especially one of the grounds that the need of our neighbors is more than ours. It's quite commendable. What about people like us of Indian origin who want to nevertheless give some money for India relief? Do we have to give it directly to India, or there are some local agencies which collect, saying that it is meant for India? Will India turn that down, or will it reach properly?
Well, my response is that we will certainly not turn that down, because there have been individuals who have, and particularly people of Indian origin, a large number of them have contributed to the Prime Minister's National Relief Fund, and the details of that are available on our website.
Yeah.
But there are also, we would say that go by whatever you're comfortable with. I mean, for instance, the President of the United States has taken the initiative, and you have Presidents Clinton and Bush Sr., mm-hmm. they are trying to mobilize funds. So as individuals and as organizations, you can help and contribute there. Or you contribute to whomever you're comfortable with a particular church group or whomever, International Red Cross, anything.
Manny, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And here's another caller, Pratima. Pratima is with us from Cincinnati.
Hi, I'm just calling to say that I was in India. I was in Bangalore when the tsunami was it happened, and I just felt like in India, when I was there, the response was not as much. I mean, I've come back here, and it seems like the response is much more, and people are more, caring about the whole thing. And I just feel like India should have accepted the aid. I feel that people need immediate assistance, and then I just felt that was just my concern, that people needed the aid immediately.
Ambassador?
Well, the You know, I said in the past that just a little while ago that we found from our experience in the past, you know, when you talk about immediate aid, it's available right in sometimes in the village or the nearby town. People send clothes from all over the place to a country which is exporting textiles, where you get apparel and clothing at one tenth the price and what they need to wear. The second aspect is the same thing with pharmaceuticals and medicines. They need that, and they can get it because we produce it, and it can be. But what happened with these shipments of medicines? Firstly, we found that 3/4 of them were wasted; they were not even relevant. Secondly, the clothes, they were not used. Even now, they are piled up. We have in the worst affected areas piles of clothing. And all this is just diverting attention because we have to account for it. Otherwise, they'll say, what's happened to what I've given? So this is diverting attention, in fact. So I would appeal to people, please do not send clothing, medicines, or anything. Just if you have confidence in any group which is working there, work with them.
Being killed with kindness, in a sense. Pratima, very quickly.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. And Ambassador Ronan Sen, we wanted to thank you for your time today. We appreciate you coming in to speak with
thank
us.
Thank you very much, Neil. Pleasure.
Ambassador Sen is India's ambassador to the United States. He was with us here in Studio 3A. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.